December 13, 2012, Mayapur, India, an extra devotion, class 19.
So Rupa Goswami has gone over. Oh, whose is this?
This is one of the nicest places I've ever gotten. Really? I've been looking for something like this for, like, years.
Thank you!
Wow.
That's cool. Okay. If any of you didn't get the yoga ladder papers from yesterday, they're over here. There are two different kinds, and we still have the second half, somebody's second half of the handouts also is over there. If there's someone who didn't get that. So we're continuing on with Rupa Goswami saying, what are not the angas of bhakti? What are not the angas of bhakti? And I want to make a little distinction here. Before enduring. So before we have qualifications for bhakti, and we have angas or limbs of bhakti. So something like varnashram, which we've talked about a lot. It's not a qualification for bhakti. However, if you're a pious person, is that helpful?
Yeah,
of course it's helpful. Yes, definitely. And pious activities, which is what varnashram is, are not angas of bhakti. However, in bhakti, you can offer to Krishna even our ordinary materialistic activities. We've seen that several times. Now, if you say varnashram is necessary for bhakti, then you're promoting karma-covered bhakti. But it is helpful. And if you say varnashram is part of bhakti, then you're violating the anyavilasita sunya, because varnashram as it is materialistic. But if you say that even our ordinary activities, which is what varna and ashram are, their way of organizing our ordinary activities, can be offered to Krishna in service, those are what's called secondary activities. And the way I think of them is something like this. So bhakti is the fire, and if you put a pot on the fire, it also gets hot. The pot also gets hot. So even our ordinary activities, according to ashrama, whether we're married or we're renounced, according to varna, what kind of work we do in order to live, if we offer those to Krishna, and we do them with the idea that Krishna is my boss, then they will also have an effect like the angas of bhakti, although they're not angas of bhakti. And you could put them under, you could say that doing those things in bhakti is the one of all endeavors. Anyway, I can't find it right now. But doing all endeavors for Krishna was right after surrendering. Aha, page 99. Performing all endeavors for Krishna. So you could take that whatever endeavor I do, if I'm serving my husband, changing my baby's nappy, or I'm living the life of a renunciate, whether I'm working in a bank, whether I'm teaching, whether I'm growing vegetables, whether I'm making pottery, if I'm doing that for Krishna, it can become performing all endeavors for Krishna rather than something in varnashram. Make sense to everybody? So here we have in this chapter, chapter 14, some other items which people may think are either qualifications for bhakti or parts of bhakti. And that's renunciation,
What's another one?
Knowledge.
Those are the two main ones. And there's a few other mentions. Anybody know what they are?
Vegetarian.
Being vegetarian, being nonviolent. Okay, so renunciation, knowledge, and nonviolence. So somebody might think, well, you'll be a lot better off in bhakti if you renounce first. Right? Or first if you have knowledge. This knowledge does not mean knowledge of the capitals of Europe. Not that kind of knowledge. Nor does it even necessarily mean just technical scriptural knowledge. Although that does give you an easier time in Vaibhakti. Yes. But here it means realized knowledge, like Gyan. Basically, both renunciation and knowledge in this are Gyan. So, talking about Varnashram is talking about karma-covered bhakti, and now we're looking at Gyan-covered bhakti. And in the same way that being a pious person is helpful, are you more likely to become a devotee if you're pious? Probably, according to Bhagavad Gita. But it's not necessary. And in bhakti, we're not really doing pious activities per se. So are you more likely to come to bhakti if you're self-realized through Gyan? Maybe. And what's interesting about both piety and spiritual knowledge, talking about like Brahman knowledge and material renunciation, is that both of them can look a lot like bhakti. Rupa Goswami talks about this also in Nectar Devotion. There can be weeds that look just like the bhakti creeper, and they're packed up tightly with the bhakti creeper. And the main point here is that bhakti gives you piety, detachment, transcendental knowledge, nonviolence. But these things do not necessarily give you bhakti. They're results of bhakti. If you're performing bhakti, you're naturally a pious person. If you're performing bhakti, you're naturally materially detached. If you're performing bhakti, you naturally realize you're not this body. If you're performing bhakti, you're naturally nonviolent. But those things don't cause bhakti. And nor are they exactly angas of bhakti. It's not one of the 64 items of bhakti, be a pious person. One of the 64 items is offer all endeavors to Krishna. But that doesn't say be a pious person. There's none of the angas of bhakti that say be materially detached, although there is an anga bhakti that says don't be affected by material joy and lamentation. And nonviolence, of course, there is an anga bhakti that says don't give pain to any living entity. But all those are very related to Krishna. Because the difference is so subtle, it can be very confusing. And it's possible to water one of these weeds around the bhakti creeper for a long time and think that you're watering the bhakti creeper. And I think this relates to also like serving the devotees. Are you serving the devotees as jivas separate from Krishna, or are you serving them as part of your devotional service for Krishna? So I want to look right now primarily at detachment. And the reason is we've talked extensively about piety and varnashram already, and that's not what's in this chapter. I think the issue of nonviolence is not particularly important for most of us. Transcendental knowledge is probably not particularly applicable, and we've also already talked about that at length. And we'll talk about that a lot more when we talk about Raghunuga Bhakti and Baba Bhakti. So I really want to look at detachment. Detachment in and of itself is, you know, nothing is here for my enjoyment. And the mood of just plain detachment
is a mood of repressing, suppressing, killing, destroying natural feelings of affection, attachment, etc. Did you already go and say goodbye?
No.
Yeah, I figured it was, these things often take 3-4 hours or something. So what's the problem with just trying to... What's the problem with just trying to kill or suppress... Thank you for playing on your thing and reminding me. Attachment and desires. Yes?
There's a third option that one of our teachers, Bishop Shetler, who also mentions in his seminar, Shanti, we can also let things go. We don't have to suppress or kill.
Okay, but there's only one way you can let things go. Well, there's also, if we're going to look at the difference between... We have at the bottom our own spiritual nature. Can someone tell me about our own spiritual nature?
Satchitananda.
So if we were going to look at this and, you know, sort of expand these in English psychological terms, what sort of things are we looking at here? What does the soul need? Like Prabhupada says, the need of the soul is?
Love.
He also says, what else?
Truth.
Pleasure. What else?
Serving.
Somebody in the back row. What else does the soul need?
Reciprocation.
Loving reciprocation.
It needs to be active.
Activity.
Desire.
Well, we're not. That's a little higher. Oh, so eternal, so life. The first Kendo Prabhupada said the need of the soul is?
Anyone?
Rasa.
Rasa,
okay.
Happiness, bliss,
pleasure. Prabhupada said in the first canto, the need of the soul is freedom. Under truth, can we put meaning? We have a need for meaning? Meaning, value. Somebody brought up that question about being insignificant. With things like understanding. What about Prabhupada's description of the kingdom, Shastra and Prabhupada's description of the kingdom of God in the third canto, that it's a place of mutual appreciation? Okay. That's also part of the soul. There's many more. What about what Krishna does all the time? What's he always doing?
Enjoying.
Enjoying in pastimes of play. Is Krishna always playing? Yeah, so play and fun. There's more. This is a partial list. So this is all part of the soul. Now when you come to desires, desires means ways we hope to achieve this.
These are the needs.
Yeah, these are the basic needs or the basic components of who we are. It's who we are. It's what we're made of. It's our natural environment. It's like the water in which we naturally live. You know, Prabhupada talks a lot about taking the fish out of the water, that it can't be happy out of the water. So this is our, the water in which we live looks like this, and more than this. This is, life includes things like security. Oh, we get peace, security, and peace. Those are all related to life. Strength, vitality. So desires means how I want to get those things. Now, if I'm already in Krishna consciousness, do I want to get any of those things? No, why not? Because you already have them. Please try to understand this point. The devotee in Krishna consciousness The reason they don't have any desires is because all of their needs are fulfilled. It's very different from the impersonalist idea, which is I have no desires because I killed all my needs. Yeah. Okay, well, that's why I want to build. This is the bottom of my tree here. It's my root. So Krishna Kshetra was talking about specific desires, as far as I understand, right?
Not like spiritual desires.
Exactly. So let's say that I have a desire for, give me an example.
Pizza.
It's pretty easy to fulfill that one in my work. So if I have a desire for pizza, what need am I trying to meet?
Pleasure
and? Some rasa of taste. Okay.
Strength.
Life.
Fun.
Okay, so how can you let the desire for pizza go? If you've already got those things on the spiritual platform, you no longer will feel that you have to get them from pizza. So that, and that's the way that bhakti gives natural detachment. Bhakti gives natural detachment, and that you already have those things. So when you look at material things, Prabhupada says on the bhava stage, and we're going to start talking about bhava today, that the reason you're detached is that you see the naked form of material desires. You see them for what they are. You see that material desires are not really ways of fulfilling our needs. They fulfill our needs partially, temporarily. What kind of happiness are they? Kapala Sukha. They're temporary happiness, and instead of satisfaction, they give us
satiation.
So therefore, after enjoying them, we have to do a boga
tyaga.
We have to renounce them. You can't eat pizza for breakfast, lunch, dinner, 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 breakfast, lunch. You become satiated. You have to renounce your pizza. You have to do the tyaga before again you can do the boga. So it's Kapala Sukha. It's temporary instead of being amrita. And it gives you satiation without satisfaction. So, okay, I have enough, I've got to renounce. And you see, and also they don't apply to the soul. They're just with the bodily senses. And plus you have to go through so much trouble to get the pizza. You have to earn the money to get the pizza. You have to cook the pizza, you have to have a kitchen, you have to have so many. So you see that after a while, you see, wait a minute, what's the naked form of this desire? It doesn't really satisfy me. But you can't just go without the satisfaction of pleasure, rasa, strength. You can't go with it. That's part of who you are. So the impersonalists try to kill who you are. Now, Prabhupada says that some detachment can be useful in the beginning. Just like some piety can be useful in the beginning. Or some nonviolence can be useful in the beginning. If you're already a vegetarian, if you're already following all the rules of varnashram, and if you're already feeling materially detached, that can be useful in the beginning. But it's not necessary. Remember that incredible paragraph about the qualifications for bhakti? Do you remember that amazing paragraph? Can we find it? Let's see who can find it, about detachment. Where Rupa Goswami had said, one who's not too attached or too detached, and how Prabhupada translated that. Who can find it first? A little harder on a Kindle, isn't it? Yeah. Although I love my Kindle. I'm even putting this on the recording, putting in my endorsement. Okay. It's a lot better than carrying around a 2,000 book library. The first paragraph of a chapter. Yeah. Okay. On account of his page 29. On account of his association with Mahatmas or great souls 100% in devotional service of the Lord, one may attain a little bit of attraction for Sri Krishna,
But at the same time, one may remain very much attached to fruitive activities and material sense enjoyment and not be prepared to undergo the different types of renunciation. Such a person, if he has unflinching attraction to Krishna, becomes an eligible candidate for discharging devotional service. What a paragraph. What an astonishing thing. Rupa Goswami says you shouldn't be too attached or too detached. If you're too detached, you're not a suitable candidate. Why?
Hard.
You don't think you're a person. You're trying to kill yourself. Okay, so that's on the before bhakti. Before bhakti, some detachment is helpful, like some piety is helpful, some nonviolence is helpful. But too much detachment is actually a problem. Too much piety can be a problem. You're thinking, I'm a very pious person, you know? What we're concerned about in this chapter is much more an anga of bhakti, because Rupa Goswami here is talking about the angas of bhakti. So he's not so much talking about pre-bhakti, but in bhakti. And he's saying detachment is not an anga of bhakti. My dear friends, detachment is not an anga of bhakti. Detachment is not an anga of bhakti. Detachment is not an anga of bhakti. Detachment is not an anga. What will happen if you just try to practice detachment?
You will have three possible results. Yes? Your heart will become hard, broken by your wrath. Have you ever seen devotees like that? I stopped my feelings. I have no feelings for anybody. I am a rock.
There was a famous song like that by Simon Garfunkel. Probably most of you are too young. I am a rock. I am an island. For a rock feels no pain, and an island never cries. So people can become like a rock. I had a god sister who did that to herself, and then she had one of the other problems. But first, what she did was she made herself a rock. By the way, becoming a rock is generally just the tyaga phase. Are you lost without your translator? Is she lost without her translator? Is she sick? Are you sick, tired, or are you lost without your translator? A little of both. Can you understand anything? Very little. I will try to talk a little more slowly. Is your translator coming? After. She's late. Thank you for coming anyway, even without your translator. So hard-hearted means I try to feel nothing. Now, men are more likely to do this than women, but I've seen women do this also. Now, bhakti is about softening the heart until it melts and comes out as tears for your eyes. That's what bhakti is about. Bhakti is not about hardening your heart. If your way of dealing with your material attachments is hardening your heart, you are going down the wrong road. Be careful. This is a big problem, and I see many people do this. They take their self, their desires, and they try to kill it. They take the many statements in the Shastra and from Srila Prabhupada about the stupidity, futility, idiocy, emptiness of material life, and they respond to it by hardening their heart and trying to feel nothing. And when you study Bhagavad Gita, you'll find that Krishna says this is not a recommended path. He says, Klesho jika tarastesham avyakta shaktitejasam avyakta hi gatir dukam deha vadbir avapyate. it's very hard to do because it's unnatural. It's against who we are. And when you do it, then to go from there to bhakti is more difficult. So I mentioned this the other day, but I'm going to tell the story again a little bit more. So my sister's son was living as a brahmachari, again, in another tradition, in the Jewish tradition, not in our tradition. And he was a very strict brahmachari. He was living in a brahmachari ashram, and he had his guru, his rebbe. And for many years, he just saw his mother and sister maybe once or twice in a month. And he had no dealings with any women at all. And then when he was like 22, he went to his guru, his rebbe, and he said, "I would like to marry." And his rebbe said, "Oh, thank you." His rebbe said, "Up until now, you've not looked at any women. But if I introduce you to a girl, I need you to look at her." So when you harden your heart, it's like you don't look at anything, you don't hear anything, you don't see anything, you don't smell anything. And then when it's time, first of all, that's very hard to do. Yeah, you can do it for an hour or a day, maybe a week, but permanently? And if you become successful, then it's hard to look at? Who do we need to look at?
Krishna.
Krishna. It's hard to look at Krishna. Oh, I don't see anything. Okay. And I mentioned, sometimes we see this with brahmacharis in our movement who get married, and then, you know, they're afraid to have any affectionate dealings with their wife. We see this sometimes. I've heard this sometimes in counseling couples where the man will say, "You know, I was a brahmachari for 10, 15 years. Of course, the traditional brahmachari got married at about what age? That's the absolute latest. Actually, probably said the latest should be 24. What age do you think most brahmacharis got married in a traditional society?
15,
16. Yeah, somewhere between 4, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu got married at 14. Somewhere between like 14 and 20. That's not talking about someone who becomes a brahmachari when they're 25 and they stay in the brahmachari ashram until they're 35 and then they get married. You know, we have kind of a brahmachari ashram, we have like a gurukula for adults kind of. You see that people can become hard-hearted. Many times when people artificially try to stay in a renounced ashram longer than they should, they have this mood, stay brahmachari as long as possible. Whereas Prabhupada said, if you're going to marry, do it before 30 at the absolute latest. And he said, you know, 24 for a man should be the oldest. That then they often deal with their desires by becoming hard-hearted. If you have stopped feeling, if you don't feel things anymore, then you're going down this route. The devotee's detachment is from having very deep feelings for Krishna. And those feelings satisfy them. The devotees are awash in an ocean of feeling, of rasa. We're swimming in the ocean of rasa. And that's why we're detached from the drops of rasa. We don't want an empty heart that's like a stone cave. Okay, other thing that can happen is that lust has a younger brother, according to Bhagavatam. Who is the younger brother of lust?
Anger.
So, Mr. Anger. So another thing that comes from trying to kill who we are is anger. Anger comes generally from either unfulfilled needs or the fear of unfulfilled needs. I needed something, I tried to get it, I didn't get it, and I become angry. Or I'm afraid I won't get it, and I become angry. There, Krishna talks about attachment, fear, and anger. It's kind of like a circle. An attachment, fear, and anger. He talks about this twice, right?
So get to mind twice in the Gita, yeah?
Attachment, fear, anger. When we're angry, unless it's rasa anger, which is blissful and sweet, but otherwise when we're materially angry, it's because we have some fear. Either a fear that something I have I'm going to lose, or a fear that something I don't have I won't get.
When people try to kill themselves, when they try to kill their natural beings, they can either become hard-hearted or they can become angry. Anger is one of the 12 rasas. Now, being a stone is not. Can't get any happiness at all from being a stone. So most people don't stay stone-like.
Most people who try to kill, who try to become detached by killing these things, either they go here or they go here, and they'll try to take happiness from anger. We've also seen this many times.
Now, if you're a devotee and you're getting your happiness from anger, who might you start becoming angry at?
Your wife.
Your wife. And who else? Especially your wife, actually, or your husband. Especially your wife or your husband, actually. Because this nature of the soul is primarily for love, and we're looking for that especially in our spouse. And when we don't get it with our spouse because we can't, because they're not Krishna, then we become angry. So quite common. With children, with devotees. Yeah, you become angry with devotees. And then when you become angry with devotees, you start committing offenses. And I have seen many, 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 many people, and I have done this myself. Sorry to admit. I have tried this. You know, we have seen people who are just absorbed in being angry and offensive at devotees. And sometimes they're like this for years. Have you know anybody like this? That's what they do. That's their rasa. They're trying to beat their detachment. Their artificial detachment is manifesting as anger toward the devotees, which ends up manifesting as offenses. And then they're getting their happiness from this anger. Is that a very nice happiness, material anger and offenses against devotees? No. But it does give a certain kind of rasa, by the way, which is why they can keep on doing it for weeks or months or years. Is that what we join the Hare Krishna movement for? No. Please don't go there. Now, the reason stone-heartedness will often lead to anger is it's hard to stay stone-hearted, because the nature of the soul will assert itself. Okay, and the other place that it is likely to go is a fall down. Hope you like my Rembrandt. I'm thinking of opening a gallery. So, what also happens is the desires can manifest themselves in some illicit way. And again, we have seen this so many times. Somebody tries to just be detached, thinking detachment is an anger of bhakti, and their desires build up, and then all of a sudden, woof! Instead of having, you know, some proper satisfaction, they get an improper satisfaction, and there's a fall.
So how do we deal with such?
That's what we are coming to. So what you don't want to do is an anga of bhakti, my dear friends, I beg at your feet, please don't make this mistake. And I wish I wasn't speaking from some experience, but I am. I have made my heart hard and become angry and thought that that was bhakti. It's not. And I've also seen many people do this. I've seen many people, this lady I was talking about, it was hard-hearted, then she had a fall down. I've seen people go from hard-heartedness to fall down, from hard-heartedness to anger. And they can go back hard-heartedness, anger, hard-heartedness, fall down. They can move between them. They're just cycling between them. You know, they fall down, then they harden their heart again, which is what? Bhogatyaga. It's just Bhogatyaga, my dear friends. And when they're in the Tyaga phase, they think, I'm so
renounced.
And then their Bhoga is either lust or anger. Maybe not sexual lust, but often. It might be pizza lust, but some kind of lust.
So they're just doing the Bhogatyaga thing. And they're thinking, well, usually I'm very renounced. Every once in a while I have a problem. They haven't gotten out of the Bhogatyaga. Material renunciation is not bhakti. So, first of all, that material renunciation, material detachment is not bhakti. It may help a little in the beginning. If when you come to Krishna consciousness, you've had some realization, this material world is stupid. It's useless. That may help in the beginning. Although we have a nice quote in the quote book where Prabhupada says, if you're just criticizing the material world, you'll depress Krishna. Did you read that? He said, like if your friend says, here's my nice garden, you say, what a stupid garden. Huh? I mean, I remember when I was first getting interested in Krishna consciousness, I worked in a museum and I was chanting Ishopanishad. Long story why I was chanting Ishopanishad. Anyway, I was chanting Ishopanishad and it gave me some detachment. And I was seeing the people in the museum as engaged in a futile attempt for enjoyment and being fools. And I decided I didn't want to be such a fool. Or I'm working on Jai Dwajamaraj's book on Ecclesiastes. And he heard Ecclesiastes when he was studying the Bible as a child, and it gave him some detachment. So some detachment is very, very, very helpful in the beginning. But we're not interested in cultivating detachment. How fascinating. We're interested in cultivating love of God. Now, one way you know you're cultivating love of God is you become detached. That's one of your symptoms. But what kind of detachment does it look like this stuff?
No.
No, what does it look like?
It just stays for me.
It looks like this. Right? Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. Next line, na so chiti na kanchiti. Who's the person who's not hankering and lamenting because he's joyful? Prabhupada wrote Jadrani, unless you become joyful, you can't make any advancement. Alright. So how do we deal with material desires? Oh, Prabhupada says such nice things in this chapter. Actually, it's really funny because my husband's a technology guy, and he used to quote from this chapter. Right? One should not give up anything which can be utilized in the service of the Lord. This is the secret of devotional service. 115. For example, since we're using many machines, sometimes people ask us, why are you using material products if you condemn the advancement of material civilization? We ask people to do whatever they are doing in Krishna's service. If the typewriter can be utilized for advancing our Krishna consciousness movement, we must accept it. My husband used to quote that a lot. Well, we were one of the first families in the Hare Krishna movement to get our own computer. In TRS-80 level 1. None of you know what that is. 2 or 3 of you know what that is. But the rumors went around the temple that we had a TV. And I remember some sannyasis visiting us and some of them saying, in Vrindavan, we would never use a computer. No comment. Okay, and then what else to say? Oh yeah, okay, 114. Eating is necessary and one wants some palatable dishes to satisfy a sense of taste. So in that case, for the satisfaction of Krishna rather than for the satisfaction of the tongue, some palatable dishes may be prepared and offered to Krishna. That is renunciation. And here's another nice one. Let the palatable dishes be prepared. Don't you love Srila Prabhupada's giving us spiritual life? But unless they are offered to Krishna, one should not accept them for eating. This vow, rejecting anything which is not offered to Krishna, is actually renunciation. And by such renunciation, one is able to satisfy the demands of the senses. So our way of dealing with this is at the core level, we need to be falling in love with Krishna. If you're not getting attached to Krishna and you're not falling in love with Krishna, you're not thinking about Krishna, you're not going to be happy either materially or spiritually. You know, it's just not going to work. You've got to be doing it, folks. That's the beginning of bhakti. Beginning of what? Part of bhakti. This guy. It's the beginning of Vaidhi's side of the bhakti, is to have some, right? Take that attachment, everything, all these 64 angas are meant to take that attachment and grow it and grow it and nourishment and nourish. And you know, if you're attached to Krishna, you're naturally not going to become interested in the things of this world. And you can say, okay, but I still am. Okay, take those things and use them in Krishna's service. So get to the root, get attached to Krishna. While you're getting attached to Krishna, whatever material attachments we still have, and we have some, yes?
Yes.
Okay, fine. That's okay. Let the palatable dishes be prepared, Prabhupada says. Wear your pretty saris. Just don't wear, you know... wear pretty saris. And wear them nicely. Thank God there's no video here. So when you're wearing your saris, don't wear them like, you know. Right? But if you have it, or you know, all women, especially young women, always want to look pretty. So look pretty. And get a husband you can look pretty for. So have a way of engaging it in Krishna's service. Right? Makes sense to everybody? Yeah? Yes? You want the pizza, offer the pizza to Krishna. You like entertainment, you know? Watch Krishna conscious movies. Do dramas for Krishna. You want some excitement and adventure? You know, come preach with me in the Middle East. But the main thing is to get to the root. Got it? Got it. So now we finish talking about the 64 angas of bhakti. And what's not one of the 64 angas, what's not one of the 64 angas is pious activities, detachment, nonviolence. Although there are things in the 64 angas that look something like that, but not separate from Krishna. Now, there's another way of organizing the angas of bhakti. There's another, I can't, I will, write it down. There's another way of organizing the angas of bhakti. And that is according to 9 processes. And if we're not sure what those processes mean, there's a person we can look at who tells us what those processes mean. Okay. You can choose. Actually, just tell me what they are. Just do it in English. Take 5 minutes and you did your home fun, right? Everybody did their home fun? Good. I want you to pick one of these and the person who goes with it, and I want you to either draw a picture, write a poem, or prepare a little skit. You can do it with somebody else if you want. Actually, we'll take 10 minutes and then we'll do it right after the break. So you can either do this yourself, or you can do this with a partner or with a group.
Maybe to the student groups, because there's too many of you. We just won't have time. Who would like to do hearing? Just one person. Two people. Okay, you two work together on hearing. Who would like to do chanting? Okay, you two work together on chanting. Who would like to do remembering? Okay.